Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Wormhole Manifest podcast. I am Matt, your host, or some people call me Wormhole, but mostly Matt. Anyway, I have been working on this episode for quite some time. Even though the initial interview was recorded almost a month ago, things just got busy in my normal everyday life. My mental health issues have been up and down the last few weeks, but nothing too serious. And work was really dead around the time of recording, but then jumped up a bit right after, and then now, around Thanksgiving week, has stooped down a bit, so it's given me a chance to work on it some more. I normally do some makeshift editing according to a routine I have set in place for each episode to make sure the quality is up to my own personal standards. I've done a little bit extra for this one because I do believe that it's just that good, really. It starts off with my usual fumbling over words and my almost starstruck demeanor because this particular guest that I've admired for so long, but it really smooths out and it just turns out amazing. I've listened to it several times through and have pages and pages of notes based on what we talked about and everything, and it's great. Anyway, this episode's guest is someone who, in a weird sense, has been living this life I, myself, had once wished that I may have had in, like, a parallel universe, or maybe even in this one if things had been different a couple decades ago. As some of you may know, I have a huge fascination with Japanese culture. It's one of the main reasons why I initially joined the military, because I had high hopes that it would take me there to Japan and give me the opportunity to set up a future that I had been dreaming of for a very long time, since I was a kid. Well, things didn't quite work out as I may have wanted then, but things do turn out how they need to, as I've come to understand and respect, which also made this interview something I am very grateful for, and something I believe and I feel deep in my heart is very special. I had a bunch written down about the different aspects of some of the things discussed during the conversation, but I figured I'll just let the episode tell those things for me, and tell those things to you as you listen. I will say this, though. Finally, having had this conversation, as with most podcast episodes, after the initial recording, I have thought of so many things I just wished we would have talked about. But I am hopeful that I will get the chance again. I know we have so much to talk about, and I have so many other questions to ask. But, you know, such is life when you have such an inquisitive mind and are interested in a lot of things. All my guests, the same thing has happened every time. I think back, I listen to the episode, and I'm like, I wish I would have asked this, I wish I would have done this better, or whatever, and whatnot, and so on and so on. But anyway, I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I had making it. As usual, if you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to me at any of my social media outlets posted on the episode's description information. So thank you, and without further ado, please enjoy this episode. Yeah, thank you. Great. See ya. Hey everyone, welcome once again to another fine episode of the Wormhole Manifest podcast. Today it is my great honor and privilege to introduce our special guest tonight, or today, whichever time of the day you're listening to this podcast, Peter Payne, or your friend in Japan, the owner of the world famous company J-List, who distributes popular and almost or also obscure items from the land of the rising sun. Welcome, Peter, to the Wormhole Manifest.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
It is great to have you on here. I try to introduce or I try to invite as many different people as I can. I have been a follower of yours for a very long time.
Thank you.
So it is a great honor, and it's awesome to finally meet you and get to speak with you. Welcome.
Well, thanks so much. Yeah.
One of the things I think, you know, you probably get asked questions about anime all the time.
Of course, yeah.
You know,
I literally live anime like 20 hours a day.
Yeah. I recently watched one of your interviews. I want to give a quick shout out to the Otaku Spirit on YouTube. I watched that. That was a great interview. I learned a lot from that. Those guys seem really great. I don't know why I haven't heard of them before, but I was doing some research on you, and I stumbled upon their channel, and I was like, oh wow, this is great, you know. Like, so I want to definitely shout them out and send anybody who's listening to this podcast their way to check out their quality content on YouTube, but also. To have you here is just, it's amazing for me because as I've told you, this podcast started as kind of an event or a project for me to start focusing on my recovery or my mental health healing journey, and anime has been one of those things that has been with me for, you know, since I was pretty young, back in the maybe late 70s, early 80s. And I know from reading your blog quite a bit, it seems like kind of similar past, you know, like the same time frames. And we've interacted here and there on Twitter about different anime that, you know, you've shown me. And I've learned a ton about a ton of series from you that I've checked out. And I was like, this is awesome. But I want to find out from you, besides the anime stuff, you're living in Japan. Like you kind of live this life that I idolize in a way, because I'm like, back in the early 90s, like all I wanted to do was move to Japan, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people are like that.
And then you actually did it. So I ended up joining the military.
Did you get to go to Japan on that?
And I went, I actually got to go to Japan first when I was working as a contractor, government contractor. After I got out of the Marine Corps, I still stayed as a reservist in the military, but I worked for a large aviation company, and they sent me over to Okinawa for a couple weeks, and I got to stop in Tokyo for like one day. So it definitely was not enough time for me to see the things I've been wanting to see. But yeah, you took that journey. So if you just go through some of your brief, like early, you know, what got you to do that to begin with?
Well, I started university in 1989. And of course you have to take a language. So I'm like, well, naturally I want to take Japanese. And I guess I was good at it. I remember opening the textbook and, you know, boom, you have to learn hiragana in the first week, and the idea that, you know, when you first see it and it's like, well, what is this? It's like Arabic. It's like nothing I could ever possibly read. And then of course, you know, starting that journey, and then you get to the point where, oh wait, I can read it. And your brain, like in the beginning, you read it and you sort of pronounce it as you read it. And then later on, your brain just starts reading it just like it does English. So anyway, I guess I was good at it. And, you know, it was like really fun to get like 100 points on a test. So, hey, I'm good at, you know, studying Japanese. And of course I was highly, highly motivated. So that, positive sort of feedback loop, I did just kept on doing that. I did 4 years of Japanese. And then I'm like, well, okay, I should go to Japan for a year. Like, I'm going to go, literally, it was my plan to go for a year, and then I'll come back and do, you know, math, get a master's degree in something, or whatever was my plan. And of course, came to Japan, was an English conversation teacher, like a lot of people do, a job I cannot possibly in any way recommend. We can talk about that if you like at some point. But it's good. It's good for 1 or 2 years. It's good for a limited way to get over to Japan. But anyway, I was doing the Eikawa thing. And then I met my wife. And so like, well, this is like the perfect person. I can't go back now. Okay, whatever. And then, of course, the internet had happened. 1994 was a very important event because that's when the Netflix IPO happened. And it was a very exciting time, like a company that hasn't made any money is you know, worth $1 million going to the moon kind of thing, like Bitcoin. And that was like, well, this is really interesting. And you could just sort of feel like the world has changed and I have to do something. And then I just started casting around for something to do. I actually started a company that doing visual novels before JList in 1995. Probably no one will know the history, but it was a company called Sakurasoft. And then that ended right away. And then we switched over to JAST USA, which is the current company. So basically we were making visual novels. We reached out to a company called JAST and they're like, okay, let's do this. But of course there's no demand for that. You can't go to a store and say, hey, I've got this thing. Would you please sell it through your store? So we had to build all that from scratch. And so while we were doing that, we're like, well, as a side thing, let's start this JList idea to sell products. And that'll just be a side business. And we'll just run it for like a year until visual novels take off. And of course, JList became the main business. And obviously my timing was fantastic. Started the company a year before Google. So it was a very, very early time when you could basically be, you know, very bad at selling, that you could do anything really poorly because there's no competition at the time. Right. So we've slowly got better and better, learned what we were doing. And of course I got super lucky because my wife has bookkeeping and management and, you know, all these skills that are perfect for that we need for the company. So, and she sort of was like, well, I'd like to do something, but I don't know what I would do. So I had all the ideas of what had demand, what we should be doing, what kinds of relationships we should be making with companies inside Japan. And she had all the back-end skills to be the president and, you know, do all the bank stuff and all the, and her father is actually a banker. So she has like all these, like literally in her DNA to be good with numbers, good with accounting and things like that. So that was just a perfect storm of good luck.
Wow.
And it's worked out really well. We've been in business 26 years this October, this month. Been a fun ride. It's we've changed a lot over the years. They're like really long-term customers will know, like the things we used to sell, we don't sell them anymore because the market changed and the customers changed. But yeah, it's been just really fun. And I love being plugged into anime, being able to be like the guy who I can maybe get, you know, a couple hundred or maybe a couple thousand fans of a weird show if I write a blog post about it. And so that was just really neat.
Very fun. It really is amazing. Like just the whole process. Like, I mean, you've, like I said before the introduction, I was like, yeah, kind of like, you know, I really like your story. You know, I like how everything just seems to have lined up perfectly. And that time frame with the, you know, like you said, year before Google, I mean, before I joined the Marines, I had my very first email address was animehead, you know, one word at Hotmail. And then when Google came out, like I already had a PC and everything, and I started building computers early on. As soon as Google came out, I'm like, I got to get my Animehead email account before anybody else gets it, you know, like, so that was my first little, before the wormhole thing, it was kind of,
yeah,
Animehead was my little call sign kind of thing back in the early days of the internet. I even ran a fan club when I got out of the Marines. I started Agent Anime back in St. Louis, where I'm from. That was just, it was a great and fun time, but I had to stop. I had to basically like disband the club because my work for that aviation company, I said, kind of took precedence of my life. And I had a kind of a tyrant of a boss back then who, like, if you weren't completely 100% dedicated to the company, at all times, then you weren't, I was like, well, there goes my social life. There goes everything else. And, it was kind of a start of a lot of my anxiety and depression issues around that time too, but at least I did get to go to Japan. So that was a great thing that I got out of that. But that it's interesting that you said that, like, around that time, because I remember those days like it was yesterday, you know, when I was like searching online for anime images, I was like downloading, you know, pictures of random anime and all kinds of stuff, you know, and I was still renting VHS tapes, you know, like, wow. And doing all that. And
when I went to Japan, like, there was no commercial anime. And then, like, I would come back every year and then, like, oh, wow, you can buy commercial, like an official English release of Totoro in Tower Records was like on the leading edge back then. They're gone now in the rest of the world, but they're actually a pretty booming business inside Japan, because Japan is it doesn't change. It's why would Japan change? People still buy overpriced CDs, and, you know, it's just a unique aspect of Japan that they're very conservative and they're not interested in changing just because the rest of the world does.
And that's interesting, because that's something I also wanted to ask you about, was about that conservative nature, or that type of that aspect of the culture over there. Like, it's so different, because it's like you said, some things don't change. And it's even though we see things change like consistently over here in the States, it's all about change. But yet there's some places right. that don't. And so, like, what are so how long have you been over there? Like
31 years. Wow. I came over in 1990. I came over in October of 1991. So exactly. So one of the guides to understanding Japan is that I've been told this by Japanese people. They basically will be about a decade behind, like, whatever's happening in America or Europe. They'll be like a decade later, they'll introduce it in Japan. And things like when in 1994, I think it was, when, like, basically California said, okay, no smoking anywhere in any public place at all. That's it. And then I said, wow, I bet Japan will do this 10 years from now. And then right around 2004, they just said no smoking anywhere except for these, you know, very small, you know, designated areas inside train stations or whatever. So you can basically set your watch by that. Whenever some big change happens, like legalization of gay marriage, for example, I said, okay, maybe Japan will do this in 10 years. That's a conservative topic, like in terms of what they allow in all of Asia, will certainly be that way. But actually in certain parts of certain regions of Tokyo, it's like allowed. I don't know. It's like, if it's allowed in Shibuya-ku, what does that do for legalization of a certain subject around the whole country? I can't really say, but anyway, it's a unique aspect of Japan that they basically will let America or Europe take the risk on some new social experiment. And then there's a Japanese word called Ishibashi Tataite Wataru. And it's a stone bridge, but you never know if the stone bridge might be about to break. So you tap the stone bridge several times with a stick just to make sure that it's not going to fall down, and then you cross the bridge. And so that's what Japan does. They make sure America doesn't, you know, implode because of some social change they introduced, and then they do it.
Okay, I see. Yeah, and that makes perfect sense too, because, I mean, it's completely logical if you think about it, because if there's true. Something that you see that is an idea about something, or you see, you know, you always let somebody else do something crazy first before, right. You know, you don't just.
And that's why JList does our banking through the US, because back in 1996, when we started the company, we were like, hey, let's get a credit card because we process orders online. And Japan was like, process orders online? But what if one person in Topeka, Kansas makes an illegal order? We wouldn't know what to do about that. And then every Japanese person is really funny. They're like, but I personally don't speak English. So what would happen if I had to speak English because of this one person in Topeka, Kansas who made an order with a stolen credit card or something like that? Like, don't worry. That's not, you have to do, you know, the banker doesn't need to do that. We'll do that. So it was like, okay, Japan is not going to have credit card processing online for a very long time. So we just did it through American companies. So we're a very strange company. We're a Japanese corporation that has bank accounts in America, and, you know, it's served us well over the years, though.
That's really interesting. Like, I was kind of wondering about some of that, like, and some other aspects too. Like, where do you get your products from initially? Do you just
We just have a bunch of different distributors that we get figures from three different distribution companies, and we also do like visual novels. So we have a bunch of different companies that we're working with. The most well-known one is Nitro Plus, and our sister company is Jazz USA. So we're always working with them to get new titles. So yeah, It just depends on what we've got.
Yeah, I was talking to my wife earlier and I was like, yeah, they got so much stuff on their site, you know? And it's like, I wonder if you like, I have had friends in the past that I've known that have ran anime stores, like storefronts, like brick and mortar stores here in the US. Yeah. And sometimes they will take a trip to Japan just to walk around and go to all these different storefronts in, you know, in Akiba or whatever, and fill up like duffel bags full of merchandise. And
yeah, that's one way to do it.
And bring it back and sell it in the storefront or whatever, and mark it way up, of course, because you just
yeah, you have to do something to make a profit.
Yeah.
It's definitely tricky. I mean, and like we'll actually get a lot of people saying, hey, I have a store. Would you help me get product? I'm like, it's not our business. Sorry. We can't really do that. But yeah, it's anime is really good, but it has some fundamental problems where it's very hard to get distribution. There's like one company that distributes figures outside of Japan. It's a challenge. And of course for us, it's an important benefit of for JList that it's a little bit, you know, it's hard to get these items. So if we can get it for you, then you'll be like, oh, cool. Thanks, JList.
Yeah, cool. One aspect I wanted, you said like with the conservatism, there's, like here in America, and one of the things I've talked about on past episodes is, and I don't know how you feel about talking about this, but like there's a lot of laws that are changing in America as far as like legalization on different substances. But yet we still have like gun control issues and things like that.
Yeah.
Now, Japan, I know, has, I guess, a long history of not, like you see in some anime, like people will have guns, you know, the characters in the shows will have guns, or like the police will, or the police have armories possibly. But like, is it like illegal for people to own guns there? Like, I mean, that's what I thought it was, but like,
so
I know you can
basically
buy.
So it was funny when I came here. So I come to Japan, you know, have expectation about what I'm going to find here. And of course, obviously, you know, there's nothing like having your expectations ripped out by having expectations. So I made a friend, a guy near me who makes like high end bicycles, like handmade bicycles for racing. And his shop is named Remington. And I'm like, oh, but it's Remington, cause he spelled it wrong. Cause it's, you know, Japanese people. But, and I said, why'd you name your shop Remington? It was, well, I have this huge collection of Remington rifles. And I'm like, what the fuck? Japanese people can have Remington rifles. So basically, hunting is allowed. It's allowed with a lot of things you have to do to get a hunting license. But yeah, you have to jump through certain hoops with the police. You have to be mentally well. You have to show that you're an upstanding person, that you haven't got a criminal record, things like that. But yeah, I mean, it's not hard at all to be able to get a hunting rifle, but there's a lot of rules. And then basically handguns are absolutely NG. You're not allowed. NG means the opposite of okay, by the way. Handguns are not allowed at all. Only the Yakuza have guns. Actually, just today, on the news, like 10 minutes ago, there was a president of a company of a gyoza, like a gyoza shop, and he's from Osaka. Of course, everyone from Osaka is a Yakuza, and so he was basically shot and murdered in his one of his shops, and everyone was like, oh wow, that's such a violent crime, must have been done by the Yakuza. And then they caught the guy today. And he was on TV about that. So anyway, basically the only people who have handguns in Japan are Yakuza, and they're actually very polite. Usually they only kill other Yakuza. They don't kill, you know, average people like you or me. But anyway, yeah, they do have guns in Japan. You're allowed to have guns if you live in an area where you could reasonably hunting. Some people need to have guns to protect themselves against bears or boars or things like that.
Yeah.
Which, you know, in certain parts of the country.
There was a lot of things I didn't realize about the country in itself. I recently, well, a couple of years ago or a year and a half or so ago, and then recently I rewatched it again on Amazon Prime. I don't know if you've heard of James May. He's a British guy who's on like these Top Gear and things like that. But
I know.
He did a short special, or like a 5 or 6 episode special. It was James May, Our Man in Japan. And it really reminded me of your friend in Japan, the JList tag. I was like, oh, so I watched this and I hadn't heard of James May before this, but the special basically is him touring all of Japan in the span of I don't know if it was like a couple of weeks or a week or so, but he started way up north and there was lots of snow and like kind of, you know, like kind of mountainous areas and sled dogs and all kinds of stuff. And, mm-hmm. and it was very interesting because I was like, I hadn't really heard that much about those areas before. And of course he came through Tokyo and did a bunch of stuff and talked to like J-pop stars and all kinds of stuff like cool. that. So, I mean, if you ever get a chance, check that out. And I would like to hear what you think about it, being a person who's lived there for so long. It was just interesting to know that there was all those different climates, you know, like as far as like, it's not just, you know, I mean, I see in anime, they always have Christmas specials in every series, you know, so I know it snows in certain areas and you have four seasons kind of, but like,
it's hard to know the country when you, like, you look at it on a map. Like I remember just thinking, well, Japan is so small and, oh, I bet you could just drive anywhere, you know, but of course it's not. It's, if you spread Japan out across a map of America, it would go from Maine to New Mexico or something like that. All the islands, of course. Uh-huh. But yeah, anyone who follows so basically I've been blogging since 1998. And my time beginning as a blogger was when the American Godzilla movie was released in Japan. And I came home and I wrote some posts. It wasn't really a blog. It was actually an email, but I wrote an email and sent out to everybody. And everyone was like, wow, that's really interesting. And the feedback that I got from that made me realize, well, actually, maybe my mission isn't just to sell bento boxes or figures or naughty products, but, you know, like to actually just talk about Japan in an interesting way and have people say, oh, that's cool, and learn something about Japan. But anyway, it's really interesting how you see Japan and then you can just zoom in. Obviously, you can do that on Google Maps, but like the Kanto region, which is where Tokyo is and Yokohama is and Gunma, where I'm at, is. And then that's got a certain culture and it's got obviously a language, you know, Hogan, dialect. And then Tohoku is in the north and Tokyo is really cool. And I've done a lot of hitchhiking stuff up there. And then Hokkaido and then Chubu is in the middle. And then Kinki is in, very funny name, by the way, Kinki, that's the Nagoya area. And, you know, Kansai is, you know, so anyway, each region has its own culture. So it is really good to sort of focus on that culture and be able to say, well, what are people from Osaka like? And everyone else says they're like Americans, and Osaka is like, Tokyo is different from Osaka because Osaka, like, you know, it's just very kind of funny. But I like, yeah, it's really neat the way you can zoom in.
Whenever I think of Osaka, I just think of the character from, you know, Azumanga Daioh. Yeah. and her English, the dubbing on it was like this Southern accent, you know?
Like, yeah, they always do that. And I understand they have to do something.
Yeah, to make you sound like the country bumpkin kind of thing, you know? Yeah. Like it's very
Arkansas
funny.
Arkansas or Georgia. But anyway, anyone who follows my blog will know that I often take bizarre trips because every year I feel like I have to take one trip to a place I've never been. So this year in January, I went up to Sapporo and I went to, I like Nikka whiskey. And so I went to the Nikka whiskey factory in Yoichi and I was like getting to drink all this whiskey at like 10 a.m., like limited stuff that you can only drink there. But anyway, I just love to go to a new place, take a new trip. So I did that this year, and it feels like 5 years ago because, you know, there was no war, there was no huge economic crisis. So very, but anyway, it's one of my hobbies that I always, you know, I went to Florida, and then a month later I went to the top of Alaska just because, like, well, I can do it. I might as well go, you know, have some fun adventure and write some post about what I'm seeing there in case anyone finds it interesting.
Yeah. I was telling my wife again earlier, or a couple of days ago, I was like, every time I read one of your blog posts, I definitely learn something new. And it's like, there's this new perspective that I just haven't thought of before. And I was like, oh, wow, you know, that's really interesting. The most recent one I liked was the one that you did about when Einstein visited, Albert Einstein visited Tokyo or Japan. And I was like, me with my wormhole kind of thing, you know, I'm like really big into scientific type stuff. And the thing that you mentioned about Japan being like 10 years behind on a lot of changes and things like that is also, it's an interesting dynamic because all the anime that I see that comes out, even if it's an older anime, it seems like a lot of the ideas that the creators put into it are things that are just like mind-blowingly futuristic that you know, as far as like physics and even metaphysics or paranormal or any of this kind of stuff, they have this huge like futurism kind of thing to them.
The ideas are really amazing.
Yeah.
And any season of anime, you'll be like, oh, okay, that's totally new. Oh, there's a lot of stuff that's, you know, anime is often tropes, and there's isekai, for example, or there's idol anime, and they're going to take the same comfortable themes that they know people like, and they'll just run with them, and you know, everyone knows what to expect, and they sit down and get what they want. But there's always, you know, two or three shows that'll just be like, oh wow, okay, I did not think about that way. Like the first time you watched Madoka Magica, it was just like, okay, I all right, you, my mind has exploded. I did not ever expect Kyubey's reason for existence to stop or slow the heat death of the universe through the medium of sacrificing magical girls. That's amazing. Like, oh my God.
Yeah. Stuff is, it is really is amazing. And that's why I like to find out also, about current things to see like where we are as far as, you know, current time in Japan, current changes, current economic situation or political yeah. aspects or, you know.
So when I write my blogs, I'm like at the beginning of an anime season, I'll be like focusing on, you know, here's an anime I watched, here's why you should watch it, just to be helpful to people who there's a lot of like super, you know, fans who know what they want. And then there's a lot of casual fans who watch maybe one or two shows a season, and they're like, oh, thanks, Peter, I'll check it out. But then I'll also have a bunch of different kinds of posts that I'll make, like when Prime Minister or former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe was assassinated. And I'm like, well, you know, at least I want to write about this. And I want to say, like, here's my view, because I know that, you know, people just get a tiny bit of information, or all they'll hear is, oh, he's a right winger. They'll have like a tiny sliver of information. I'll be like, well, okay, here's my view. And yes, he's a right winger, but he did these other things that you wouldn't expect. So I'm often writing a post, and I know that no one will read those posts. I can see my Facebook stats. I'm like, a post about, you know, this minor issue between Japan and Korea or Japan and Taiwan or whatever. And I'll just sort of write some, you know, something that's in the news. I'll be like, well, I can write a post about that. But I know that it's not, you know, gonna perform well on social media. So I just do it as a public service to the sliver of people who will care. And if I want to get people to read my blog, I write a spammy post about like five reasons why Netflix is killing anime, and then everyone goes, oh, I gotta click on, you know, clickbait is absolutely a thing. You have to have that title and that image.
Yeah, that kind of clickbait thing, that, you know, clickbaity kind of, you know, let's get these people in here, and then once they're in, you know, like me, I've been
and
in
I
there
hope
for
everyone
a while.
Understands because every time you click an article, like every headline is obviously we know this, but we think we're totally rational in our judgments, especially in our political judgments. But every time we see, you know, something about Trump or something about Biden, is the headline will be framed a certain way on Fox and a certain way on MSNBC or whatever. And, you know, just understand, hold on, it's everything is slanted 40% in this direction, 40% in this direction, because that's the business. They got to get those clicks.
Right.
And so it's actually better to just not consume news or consume it from a very trusted source. Like, I like the BBC a lot. You know, just that's just the world we live in. And everything is designed to get a reaction. And if it doesn't get a reaction, it doesn't live.
Yeah. And there's so many people that are like, you know, if you click on this certain thing or read this or start to spew that or regurgitate the same information, you're like buying into that narrative of whatever's being pushed. And it's kind of like, in order to really think outside the box, you kind of have to step outside the box and be like, what do I really believe? You know, like,
and one thing I've learned that I really feel strongly about is that no matter whatever topic you're talking about, I wrote a post about, I was going to write about basically Japan and South Korea were having a spat because Shinzo Abe and the former president, Park, they basically signed an agreement closing off the comfort women issue that had been going on. So they signed an agreement. Abe apologized, the Japanese government apologized, and they paid a bunch of money, set up a foundation for the survivors. But then after President Park was sort of ejected in a national revolt, because South Korea does that a lot. They get really emotional about their president. Every South Korean president has been arrested and imprisoned, except for the current one and the one previous one. So anyway, it's a unique thing. But anyway, I wanted to talk about this issue, and I was just sort of thinking about it. And, you know, one thing I'm always upfront about is, like, I live in Japan. I have a viewpoint of, you know, the Japanese point of view, and I read a lot of posts like, JList just happens to be about a kilometer away from the site of the final air raid on August 15th, 1945, the last air raid of World War II took place in my city. There's a Fuji heavy industries plant that got bombed. And it was literally, I sort of joke, like, our stupid city is the dumbest in the world. It on the day of the end of World War II, it still managed to get bombed and half the people die. Not very many, but it was sort of funny. But anyway, that's the kind of thing where I like to research Japanese sources, and I'll write a little post about that. And maybe, you know, some it'll be interesting, you know, who knows. But anyway, anyway, what I like to be upfront about is that I'm a person living in Japan, and I'm never going to have like a South Korean point of view. If I lived in South Korea, I'd have a South Korean point of view. So I tell people that. But of course, as a blogger, I have to be honest about stuff. So anything I write about, I research the hell out of it and say, well, from this point of view, Japan says this. And like I did a post again that no one would ever care about, but the regions, Japan has territorial disputes between Russia, South Korea, and China on three different sets of islands. And I just researched that, and, you know, from Japan's point of view, here's what they say. From Russia's point of view, here's what they say. And I just sort of give each view. And so, but, you know, everyone should know that I'm a Japan focused person because I live here, but I just like to give that kind of information. That's fun. And I know that no one has a lot of information about Japan, especially because if you're like anime, that's great, but who knows about, you know, what this political party or this political party do. So sometimes I'll say, here's what Japanese politics looks like. And that's kind of nice, because you can talk about politics without people getting themselves involved, because it's another country. So it's like, yeah, here's what the Liberal Democratic Party does. And here's what the Democratic Party of Japan does, and here's what the other party does. So that's the kind of things I occasionally write about, and it's never a main thing, but it's like every one out of 20 posts, maybe I'll be like, hey, I think I'll share some interesting cultural slice of life.
Yeah, and that's cool. That's interesting, and I'm glad that you do that, and that's why, especially one of the reasons why I wanted to have it on here, because, I mean, yeah, we could talk about anime and our histories of it till we're blue in the face, you know, kind of thing. And it just, but like, what are the things about Peter that we don't get to hear about, you know? And that's why I, like, you know, wanted to have you on here. I see what time it is. Let's go ahead and take a quick break.
Okay.
And, so everybody stay tuned, listen to the little ad break there, and we'll be right back.
Talk to you later.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Thanks for hanging in there and checking out that ad and supporting things and supporting this show. I'm here with Peter Payne still, and we were just discussing some things about Japan, and we're going to continue that conversation for the next little bit here. Peter, the thing you mentioned about the Yakuza only having guns, but yet they're nice, are they more like a, like Sopranos kind of, like old school, big, long, like family history of kind of thing? Like, it's like are they really organized crime, like a syndicate kind of thing?
They are. And they've got a very, very unique, you know, organization to them. They've got, you know, obviously, like another one of the sort of ways to understand Japan is that Japan is a tate no shakai. It's a vertical society. And America is a yoko no shakai, horizontal society. So that, you know, that's obviously the minute you have to learn the word senpai and kohai, you understand that, oh, okay, you're the person who entered the company before me, and you're going to be my mentor, sort of, and I'm going to show politeness to you, and you're going to sort of look out for me, and that's that relationship that you have. And so inside, you know, yakuza, it's probably even more like, you know, you absolutely do what your senpai says, and you absolutely do what your boss says. I've had some interesting experiences. So one of the first things I did when I came to Japan, the people I was working with showed me it's sauna. It's a like a public bath slash sauna that you can go to, and every city will have this. And basically it's just a really great place to go and relax and, you know, go in the sauna and get all hot. And they put magazines outside the sauna. So you can literally take like news magazines or manga into the sauna. So I would be like, okay, I'm going to study Japanese and I'm going to read like news articles that would be too hard for me. And by doing that, I'll be able to like, you know, learn better Japanese vocabulary. But anyway, saunas and all kinds of public baths are often frequented by Yakuza. So there'd all be guys with the big tattoos. And one time this guy I would see all the time. And he was like, by the way, I want someone to teach English to my kids. Would you teach English to my kids? And I was like, oh, this would make such a great blog post to be like the you know, I taught English to the Yakuza and managed to survive or whatever. But I was like, oh, this is too weird. I just don't want to, just in case, you know. But, you know, he's a real nice guy. Most of the time they are nice. Like everyone, a smart person will cultivate a few Yakuza friends, supposedly, to make, in case you ever need to put pressure on someone or if some other person is putting pressure on you, you have that in your back pocket. Wow. In addition to running an aero business, having a Japanese wife, literally working with hentai in my job, I live in a liquor store. My house, my in-laws, like a lot of times in Japan, you'll have a house and a shop in the front. And so they run a very small, very not popular liquor store. And anyway, all the people will come in the neighborhood and they'll sit and chew the fat all morning long or whatever. And there's a local guy who runs the company, he's some kind of factory, but he's like, oh yeah, yeah, I've got all these friends just in case I need, you know, to scare someone or whatever. And it's just good business practices to have a couple of Yakuza friends just in case you ever need them. So maybe I should have stayed friends with that one guy.
And you're not going to get in trouble for talking about this if like someone over there hears this podcast later. I definitely don't want to cause any issues.
And basically, like, you know, be polite to them, show respect to them. And they'll be like, you know, once me and another friend went to a public bath and there was a guy with just this beautiful tattoo. And the guy, my friend, was like, dude, I want to take a picture of your tattoo. And so they have this picture of this dragon tattoo guy standing next to my friend. And then, you know, they know foreigners are amazed at all that kind of stuff. And it's all very cute. They would never be threatening. But another time I went to, so in these sauna places, it's a way you can stay overnight for a very, very cheap amount of money, like $30 or whatever. So one of my things was when I was young, I would travel around Japan. There's a ticket called Seishun Jihachi Kippu, where you for little like $20 a day, you can go anywhere you want on a train in a 24-hour period, but it has to be one of the slower trains. It's not the bullet train. So you can literally, if you time it right, you can get down to from Tokyo to Kyoto for $20. And it's like, oh, this is really good. I'll do that.
Wow.
Back when I had lots of time and no money. So anyway, I went to Kyoto and I'm like, hey, you know what? Instead of staying in like a hotel, I'll stay in these sauna places because it's very cheap and I like taking baths and it's really nice. But I didn't realize that Kyoto is Yakuza Central. So I'm staying in a sauna that is probably like the kombu, the headquarters of the local Yakuza group. And all these people are like, what in the fuck is a foreigner doing here? But they couldn't say anything because they don't speak English. And they assume I don't speak English. So I was like, I'm just going to sit over here in the corner and go to sleep. Good night. That was very interesting. And then I got my ass to a proper hotel the next day.
There you go. You got to look out for you, man.
Yeah. I was like, that's a little too weird.
Oh, man. Here's something interesting. Do you own a car over there, or is there any need for it? Like,
So basically that's another thing where like in Tokyo, we just take the train everywhere. Actually, we take a bus. Bus is more convenient than train because it goes right to our house. But in Guma where we are, you know, everyone has a car. We actually have like five cars in our family because our family car, my car, my wife's car, my mother-in-law's car, my father-in-law's car. So, because there's, you know, it's a very, you know, much, much more rural place. Guma is located 100 kilometers north of Tokyo. Anyone who knows Initial D will know Guma. It's where all the fast cars are.
Oh, yeah.
I live right at the base of Mount Akagi. So I can, if I'm ever in the mood, I can race up to Mount Akagi in my BMW.
You don't have a Hachiroku?
No. And I don't drive. So Subaru is a car that's made in Guma. And I'm always like, I should drive some Subaru car because I'm a resident of Guma, so I feel kind of bad about that.
before I or w- when I finally saw Initial D for the first time, I realized that his Chirino or his Hachiroku was just like a friend of mine's car that when we grew up, when he first started driving at like 16, I'm like, he had that like 86 Corolla, you know? And I was like, man, I wish I would have gotten my friend's car, man. And it's like,
cars driving around quite a lot. It's really odd. Like, how can you drive such a famous car? But like every week, at least I'll see one driving around the exact color. And sometimes with the tofu ad on the side. It's like, okay, I would be too embarrassed. That's like driving the Batmobile.
Yeah. Yeah. Or Kit from Knight Rider, yeah. You know, yeah. You're driving around in some crazy car and it's like people just, you know, are like the DeLorean from like,
yeah.
So that's cool, man. Is it weird? The thing I thought about when I was like, again, in the first segment, when I mentioned that James May special where he took that tour of Japan and was doing all this cool stuff. He was driving quite a bit and the camera was on him and he was in the car and he was talking to the camera for the special. And I was like, well, this is no problem for him seeing as he's British, you know, so being from England, you know, they're used to driving on that side of the road anyway, or that side of the car, you know, but for me, like when I was there, there was no way I was going to drive, but I didn't need to while I was, I didn't need to at all when I was in Tokyo just for that one day. But when I was in Okinawa, I had friends that were at the base that I was working on because we were at the Air Force base there. And I made the mistake of going to my friend's car to get in. And I stood on the driver's side and he's like, are you going to sit on my lap or what? And yeah. I'm like, oh,
my wife and I do that all the time because we switch back and forth all the time. And first of all, I'm very dyslexic. So that I'm like, I got to make sure I'm taking good, you know, getting on the side of the road, right side of the road. So, and so what I've learned when you're driving is you must always be closer to the center line of the road than your passenger is. And as long as you're doing that, that's fine. You'll never get on the wrong side of the road and die. But yeah, I'll go to America and I'll be like, which side of the road am I driving on? Oh, this, okay. You know, if there's other cars, that's fine. I'll just go the way they're going, but there's no cars at all at night. I'm like, okay, which side am I on now?
Yeah,
but you get used to it. I do go back and forth a lot, so it's not too bad. Although for 2 years I wasn't able to go back because of COVID. That was weird.
Oh, do you make regular trips back to the U.S.?
Yeah, basically, like visit anyone who goes to Anime Expo knows that I'm there for Anime Expo, and I'm there for San Diego Comic Con and a couple other shows. So I go back in late June, and I do the cons, and then I have a vacation with my wife, and then we go back.
That's awesome. That's definitely that's a good plan. You know, like if you're going to be traveling that much anyway, it's like you might as well take that, you know, do the work that you need to do and then you know, take a little break afterwards and do that. I'm trying to think of what else I wanted to ask you here. We covered a lot of ground on this episode. Is there anything, any weird facts or factoids or things that just are obscure that people won't know about Japan that
let's see, where would I don't have this up, I'm using it, so let's see,
or we can talk about
I write so much and random stuff, but I'll be like, I think I'll write about, you know, like 8 things you don't know about Japanese people or whatever. And so that blog is up on my blog. So you can just go to, and it's blog.jlist.com in case you want to visit. And basically I do a segment called Your Friend in Japan. And I just do my posts mostly about anime, but sometimes about other stuff. And we have a bunch of other writers. So I have some writers who cover every episode of a certain show if they're following it closely. But yeah, just I wanted to talk about, like, we were discussing mental health, but like one thing I really feel strongly is that anime is like, so I've got, you know, Facebook only shows a tiny portion of our content to our followers, but we've got like 2.7 million followers on Facebook. We've got 250,000 followers on Twitter. And I really like, you know, interacting with everybody. I post, like, on Twitter, I post probably too much, but I, I have this, you know, sort of algorithm where I love algorithms. I live my life by algorithms. Anyway, I have a combination of posts about, hey, we got this figure in, hey, we got this game in, hey, we got this, you know, naughty product in. And then in between, I'm just like memes. Obviously, memes are fun. Everyone likes memes. But things like something I noticed, something I, you know, just thing going back and forth all the time. But anyway, one thing I posted about was that anime makes you happier. And I did a blog post called 15 Ways Anime Makes You Happier. But basically, it was like, you know, bright colors. We're always looking at bright colors. We're always having new ideas because every season, while it brings, you know, yet another isekai, yet another idol anime, yet another slice of life about cat girls or whatever, but you have, you know, certainly you have new ideas that you're like, oh, wow, you know, you're being challenged. And I like the way, I think I'm too old to do it, but a lot of the people, like we work with Just USA and J18, which is our doujinshi. We have another side company is we license doujinshi from Japanese artists and publish them in English. J18 Publishing is our Twitter. So anyway, the guys who do that, they have all these friends around the world who they met on Discord. And I'm like, well, that's cool to be able to be like close enough with people on Discord that you then go to meet them in person and you work a convention with them or you do something else with them. That's really neat. And I thought, well, that's really, you know, just that's really cool. The especially people who aren't in a big city, you know, like Toho is, it's an underground sort of game culture. It's pretty famous now, but Toho used to be this really cool underground thing. And I would be like, well, how in the hell do you live in, you know, Georgia and have another friend who's a Toho fan in real life? Like, it's got to be really hard. But on the internet, you can find those people. You can become friends with them. Maybe you can meet them in person and be like, hey, cool, now we're real friends and we can go to this convention together. And just that positivity that comes from anime, or potentially comes from anime, I love so much. I'm often on our, I'll make a post about, you know, like a guy who met an otaku girl and in real life, and some of my customers or some of my followers would be like, I give up on relationships a long time ago. And so because of some negative thing that happened, and I'm like, and I'm always this like cheerleader going, hey, no, don't. I know you had that one relationship. It didn't work out, but you never know. And there are girls who watch anime. Shipping manager in San Diego, he found a girl and they watch One Piece together. It's, you know, it's not impossible. My wife, she says, I don't like anime. I don't watch anime. And yet she ends up watching like 50% or more of the shows that I watch because I'm watching them on the TV. She falls asleep on the sofa, wakes up. Of course, it's really interesting. She's like, oh, well, do you have the next episode? And so, you know, you just never know. I'm always impressed at the ways that anime can help people. And many, many, many people have told me, yes, anime was, you know, the reason I'm alive today is because of anime. And this one show that just really deeply affected me in a positive way, helped me, you know, get through this really troubling time. And I just love that. And I'm like, hey, great, you know, let's keep the positivity going.
Yeah, I'm one of those people. Like, I mean, I used anime like for many, many years as my kind of, it's almost like my drug of choice, you know, like it was, yeah. It was my escape from, I mean, when you're, and it's funny too, because I got so many, like you wouldn't ever really put the kind of person I used to be, this young, hard charging Marine who, you know, is serving in the military, as you know, but you end up meeting so many people that are into all this different cultural subculture kind of, you know, random stuff that it's amazing. And you wouldn't think about it. Like the normal person or random normal person, especially in the Midwest, would be like, wouldn't think that someone who joins the military or who's a grunt and goes off to wars and stuff like that in their downtime likes to draw like hentai pictures, you know, or something like, or yeah, anime girls or whatever. But one of my friends from a long time ago, who actually served in the Desert Storm, Desert Shield and all that stuff, was a Marine and ended up making a living making comic books, based on, drawing, you know, those kind of anime style girls.
Cool.
But it was weird to see, I, like when I was in the Marines, it was right when Pokemon was coming out. And like, mm-hmm. I was like, I know it's a kid's show over here, but I was like, I wanted to check it out because it was one of the first big anime that made it into that kind of primetime slot on regular television, you know? And I was like,
right.
You know, of course, going back to 70s and 80s, we had other things like Robotech, which I think we briefly talked about on, oh, yeah. on Twitter and, you know, and Battle of the Planets and Battleship.
I just wrote Yamato. We just had the 40th anniversary of Macross. And I did a long blog post about that. Just, oh yeah. Just, oh man. And we were all so happy to have this great show and
I know.
Drama and war and like a city getting blown up. What is this show? Oh my God. So just so much fun.
Yeah. And then like the characters, like, you know, the whole love triangle thing, you know, was like,
yeah.
It was unheard of in American cartoons, you know, or whatever.
I love the way like anime brings us together too. Or like, obviously like, and I say like, I could go to Brazil. I could go to, we don't want to go to Russia right now, but I could go somewhere in the world and I could find an anime fan. If we couldn't understand, we could at least be like, look at this picture. Which girl do you like? Oh, she's the best. Oh yeah. Don't you love this show? Oh yeah. I love it so much. And that's just amazing. It's like this mist that just connects the whole world. Mm-hmm. And it's a golden age. Like people should understand, like if you watch the anime industry, like in terms of how many shows are produced and the total value of industry, it went up and then it had a big bubble. It was, I call it the anime licensing bubble in 2004 or ending about 2006. Music Mart went away. Suncoast Video went away. Suddenly you couldn't sell anime anymore and then everything crashed. But anyway, that was a huge, you know, hangover. And then now it's all recovered, obviously, and it's just booming because thanks to streaming. And just everyone should understand we live in a great, great era as anime fans right now.
Yeah, that connection you're talking about. When I was in Italy, I had I had a Tenchi Muyo or no, maybe it was Zerum, the animation, Iria. I think I had a T-shirt on and I was on the train going from Naples to Rome on a train. And another guy across from me, I think he had a Tenchi Muyo shirt on. Oh. And I looked and he was looking at my shirt and it's like he knew that I didn't speak Italian and I know he probably didn't speak English, but we just kind of had that nod. We were like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, dude.
Anime great fans connecting across the world.
One of the things, you know? Like it was like on Reddit or something, I saw a thread where like, you know, it was on one of our Discord channels that we run. And it was like, hey dude, what shows are you watching this season? Oh, I can't watch anime this season. I'm Ukrainian. I have to go off to war. And it was like, oh, fucking, what are you doing? You're like invading, like, oh my God, the feels. So that's just like, and I wrote a blog post about, so there's a game. So we published visual novels, which are choose your own adventure PC games where you have 8 girls and you have to make choices. And if you make the right choices, you get to have sex with the girls. And so there was a game we published, a second game we published called Season of the Sakura. And this was like pirated all across Russia. And everyone of a certain age has definitely played this game, I've been told. My game was pirated. Oh, bummer. But that's, you know, I don't care about that. I'm really happy that a lot of people in Russia, maybe they learned English from this game, you know, that kind of thing. And that was really neat. And, you know, just that connection where even places like Russia, like, hey, yeah, girls in pants or whatever. Yeah, I like that a lot. Great. That's cool. So I'm very upset about the Russian invasion of Ukraine. I want them to stop it and maybe get back to the point where we can have friends from Russia, from Ukraine. We can talk about anime. We can share anime memes together. That's a much better world than having war and all this sadness and stuff.
Yeah, it is a very sad situation over there. I follow quite a bit of
news. I watch YouTube videos all day long, even though it doesn't help. But I'm like, well, I gotta follow the Kursan invasion, and you know.
I try to stay up to date on what's going on around the world, and it's just there's so many, you know. Part of it was just me catching up with what's going on. I mean, there was times where I was forced to go when I was still in the military before I retired. You know, I had to do these intel briefs all the time to find out where the hotspots were in the war, especially in the Middle East and things like that, and what's going on, and just to keep everybody up to date. So it kind of makes our mission seem like, you know, we we're doing it for a reason, you know, this is our purpose, you know, to just, you know, if we know what's going on out there, we can be aware, yeah. have this awareness of what's going on. And, I'm kind of, now that I've been out for like 7-8 years, it's so weird to me that I don't get those kind of briefings anymore. So I got to just force myself. And for many years, I was in this like deep, dark depression where I couldn't bring myself to watch anything but like the local weather channel or, you know, things.
I just couldn't focus. It's been hard going from this world to this world and everything you're used to. Oh, that's, you don't have to get up at this time because you're not in the military anymore. That must have been hard to adjust to.
Yeah, that transition. And it was really difficult.
I'm from San Diego where there's a lot of military there. And, you know, obviously we're very, you know, thankful to our military, the amazing people who serve. And just, you know, San Diego is just this huge Navy town. Everyone is so, so dedicated.
Yep.
I grew up in Tierra Santa, which is right next to Murphy Canyon, which is like the naval housing. So all my friends were Navy and I would go to the hangout at their house all the time and play Atari video games.
What's funny is my wife now, my current wife, is actually from San Diego as well. And her mom was in the Navy for a short bit. And my wife was in high school in San Diego when I was in MCRD, Marine Recruit Training in San Diego back in...
She might have gone to my high school, Sarah. 96. It was called Sarah High School, but I think they changed the name.
I'm not sure. She did get homeschooled for the last few years of high school, I believe. So, but yeah, it's a small world, you know, like that's one thing. It's like especially talking about, if you're talking about anything, if you're talking about like world events, or if you're talking about mental health, or you're talking about anime, it really is all connected. And that's another reason why I wanted to start this podcast, was so that I could talk to people out there in the world,
or and then even find some of those connections.
Yeah. And just find those, like, there's just so many weird, random, like synchronicities, I call them, you know,
three times I learned Japanese in SDSU. And three times I'm walking around Yokohama, a city 150 miles from where I live, and three different times I meet students that I studied with. Oh, wow. And I'm like, what? That's bizarre. Like, how can I be in a restaurant and see the guy I studied Japanese with that in a city I don't live in? And he, you know, just what the hell? You just never know. So
yeah,
there's something about the world. I don't know what it is.
It's a small world. It literally is. And when you think of how big the universe is, and I go into my wormhole science and physics and astrophysics and all this stuff, you know, like it really is a small world. So it's no surprise to me on how connected everything really truly is.
Right.
And then when you get down into the nuanced bits of how, you know, things grow and plants evolve and how humans evolved as a species, you know, it really is all connected and in more ways than we can even see or.
Yeah, we definitely don't know. We think we know the world. Like, we don't know the world. There's something,
right.
Something there. Like when we finally understand dark energy or something like that, it'll be like, oh, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Someday we'll know.
I blame a lot of our politics on things like the Large Hadron Collider, the LHC, you know, doing these experiments, you know, smashing particles, you know, it's like,
you never know.
I've made jokes. I'm like, that's why Trump became president, because we're actually in an alternate universe than when we started, you know.
Gate.
Yeah. Back in like 2010 or whenever they first started that thing up, you know, it's like, it just opened up these like, you know, black holes that caused our realities to start shifting and emerging.
That may or may not be true, but it's as true as many other things that people definitely believe. And I'm like, I'll bet both of these things are equally true or not true. And, but you're not allowed to say that. Or like, are you sure? I don't know.
Right.
You just think you believe it because she's your the thing is about politics. Like, no matter what you're a Democrat or Republican, like, just understand that it's just like sports teams. I am they're no longer the San Diego Chargers, but I'm a local sports team fan and I want them to win no matter what.
Right.
And if they lose, I'm angry. And just understand that the things you believe are because all the people around you believe. There's a very important book. I really, really recommend it to any thoughtful person. It's called Influence by Robert Cialdini. Cialdini. Anyway, it lets you understand the way, like when we watch a TV show with a laugh track and we're sort of affected by the laugh track, even though we know there's no people laughing. And if you have 8 friends around you of a certain political persuasion, you will be pulled in their direction or you'll find other friends. And so the things you open yourself to and the thing, you know, it's just, you know, when you sort of realize, oh, wait, I probably shouldn't hang out with that person. He's a negative person. Like if you have negative friends who think, oh, no one could ever be successful. I've got some people like that in my life. And I'm like, I don't really want to hang around you, dude. I think that a lot of things are possible. And I think that a problem like right now, the stock market is down. Well, maybe you can turn that into a positive. Maybe there's a horrible problem that you can find that I'm always saying, my wife knows this. I'm always saying there's a solution to every problem. You need to find the Konami code and just that one, you know, thing that will unlock that one thing that you want, that one thing that you're looking for. And there is a way to solve any problem. You just have to calmly find a way. Like when Corona happened, I said, okay, this is just like, you know, the 9/11 attacks and just like the 2008 crisis. It's just a problem. We'll get through it. We'll all support each other. We'll, you know, when you're ready to order, JLS will be here for you. We got your hentai book that you want. And you know, just, I've been doing this so long, you know, just, oh, it's a crisis. Oh, it's a recession. No problem. It'll last 9 months and we'll come out at the other end, whatever. And you know, I've always been like, again, like, hey, it's okay. Don't worry. We'll all get through it. Corona, you know, whatever, it sucks. We'll look back and laugh. So I try to do that every day as much as I can.
That's awesome. That's awesome, man. I really appreciate that. I think that's actually a good note to end the show on. I wanted to tell everyone, this was one of the things I mentioned recently. Ooh, the school days.
Wow.
It came with the Opi mouse pad, you know.
That and, mouse pad.
And the funny thing about that, a quick story, was when I first ordered this, it was before I started to go.
That was 2014, I believe.
I believe, well, no, it must've been sooner than that. I think I got this. It was either 2000.
Maybe you could have bought it used from somebody else. I think we sold out. We had it for like a year. So I don't know. Maybe
the funny thing about it was when I got it, the, one of the boobs was popped. So like, ooh, it was leaking this like gel kind of stuff.
And that happens sometimes.
And I was like, I think I posted it like on Facebook or whatever. I was like, oh my God, the breast implant exploded. I'm like, this is like any model's like worst nightmare.
You know? It's a horror game sort of. So I guess it's just another aspect of
days. Yeah, you guys sent me another one. So I was like, oh, that's so awesome. Oh, cool. You know? I wanted to mention too, like, I think one of the first ads I've seen from JLS, how I found out about you guys, was in the An America magazine that I used to collect. Back in the day. Like, I think if you guys started in 96, that's also when I joined the Marines and I left my hometown. Might have been
New Type. New Type was amazing. New Type was so good because you just put your ad in there and everyone in the world knows your company because of the ad. And when it went away, everyone was sad because New Type was amazing, New Type USA. But I'm like, no, this is the one thing that I just need for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
So now it's much harder to, well, you know, we're an adult site, so it's really tricky because we can't do Google, you know, we can't advertise on Reddit because no adult advertising. We can't advertise. We have our Twitter feed and we post, you know, anime boobs, things like that, cute stuff.
Yeah.
But we can't advertise anywhere. So it's really tricky to get new customers. So if you don't, if you're an anime fan and you like sort of sexy products, please check our site. We do a lot of figures. We do a lot of adult products. We used to be, if you checked us out a long time ago, we used to be a very general store and we had bento. We had like several categories of bento products. And we had, you know, traditional items like geta shoes, things like that. But all of those items just became just impossible to keep on selling because of how just the market changed and how our customer, what our customers wanted to change. So we had to, obviously we have to change when the market says, hey, you have to change. So we've tried to not be afraid of that. And any product, like we used to sell, not this one, but we used to sell a line of t-shirts, and JLS t-shirts was this huge category of product for us. But slowly that faded out and became, you know, to keep a warehouse full of t-shirts that we only basically sell at conventions or around Christmas time was like, okay, this needs to be changed. So we got out of the t-shirt business. So it's important to change when you need to change.
Yeah. Is there any particular person or other company? I know I gave a shout out earlier to the Otaku Spirit YouTube channel. I'm going to give a shout out to my artist friend, Cats Will Eat You. Go check out his websites. But Peter, if you have anyone you want to give a shout out to, let me know, or you can just, you just plug your site. I recommend everyone.
So basically JLS.com, JLSC.com is our everything, including adult product site. If you just want to look at all ages stuff, we have JBox.com, JBOX, and that's just figures and wall scrolls or whatever, all ages or non-nudity stuff. And then if you like visual novels, we have JustUSA.com, which is our visual novel company. It's all digital sales. We've got just tons of stuff. We do all of our own products, obviously, and we publish. We're a shop where we publish a lot of other people, so a lot of different games there. And then J18 Publishing is the Twitter is, you can follow the Twitter, and all of their products are sold on JList also, but also there's a website called hmarket.io, which is, if you like hentai visual or hentai, doujinshi and manga fully translated, they're so obsessive about the quality of the lettering and the sound effects, and everything has to be perfect. And if they print like 1,000 copies of the books and the resolution wasn't right, or it's just slightly bad, they'll throw them away and reprint them. I can't believe their dedication. So if you're a fan of art from Japan, all of those websites and or Twitter feeds are certainly good to be following.
Yeah, I definitely need to get on
If you're over 18.
Yeah, if you're over 18, I need to get on some of those art books, because I mean, I have some of them, and I love to just sit there and flip through and look at the art, and it's just amazing. And it's
well, to be able to work with the quality of art and every day, just and to be able to be one of the companies that's helping the artists, rather, you know, in the world where everything is up on the internet anyway. We don't know who's going to publish your book. We did this. You know, an artist named Kantoku. He's like one of the best hentai artists, and we did this giant box set of two different hardcover art books. And it's so bloody good. And we're just so happy with it. And we brought like 800 to not that much. We brought like 200 to Anime Expo. And, you know, of course, it sold them out because everyone was like, God, I got to get this. Had people buying multiple copies. So that's what we love. It's really fun to be able to work with artists, work with really good stuff, and then to be able to be the company that's bringing it out in an uncensored form. So that's like, hey, that's really cool. We're actually really, you know, adding to the experience of all fans and all artists and stuff. So that's what we want to do at JList, J18 Publishing, and Just USA.
All right. Well, you guys out there, you heard it direct from Peter's mouth here on the Wormhole Manifest podcast. Peter, Senpai, thank you so much for giving me this time. No, I really appreciate it.
It was fun.
I'm trying to get this show more and more noticed out there. And, you know, if anything,
I'll promote it too on the Twitter.
I'm happy to be able to talk to people from around the world and get the kind of information out there that not just I'm interested in, but I hopefully other people are interested in also and learning about these things that I talk about, like with mental health awareness and all that, because it really is important. It's very important that we all, you know, stick together and try to help each other out. And like you mentioned, Peter, like the connections that we make in the world are really what's important. It's sad when sad things happen, like war and all that stuff. But you are right. You're right that whenever a pandemic comes along or something bad happens, life moves on after that. You know, we will get through it as long as we stick together. Right. So I appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining me on here, everybody. Okay. I appreciate you listening. And we will see you next time.
All right. Have a good day.
Cheers.